With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
That was it.
What's just happened?
It's over the line.
Definitely.
I can see it from here. This is why we should have bloody Hawkeye in the championship. It was over the line.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Welcome to We Are Going Up, a century on and still going strong. I'm pleased to report this is episode 101. I'm Mark Crossy. Carl McQueen is back this week.
Hello there.
Hello. And David Cameron Walker, who is far more interested in what is going on the television behind me, DC, because we're recording at the time when your team are in action.
Yes, we are taking on Brighton down at the Amex. It is a delayed kickoff. Due to the adverse weather conditions,
it is.
To 8 o'clock.
We've all made it in despite the weather.
We're just about to start.
It's been your birthday this weekend.
It certainly has.
Enjoyed it?
Yes, and I was down in Brighton of all places on Friday evening.
You were. We moved the game.
I originally thought Watford were going to be there as well, but they weren't. But I had a lovely time. And do you know what? Without boring you too long about the story, something completely
make it quick.
Ridiculous happened to me on Saturday night. So I was out in Angel in London, and I had to go home. I didn't have any money at the end of the night. I had no money to get no money on my Oyster, no cash in my wallet. So obviously I had to go to the cash point to find either money for my Oyster or a cab home.
Yep.
So I thought, right, I'm going to get a cab. Went to the cash point and it wasn't working. Went to the next cash point, it wasn't working. Then there was a little cash point in a shop, wasn't working. So this is a bit weird, isn't it? Maybe it's something problem with this sort of road.
Conspiracy.
So I'll get in a cab, I'll get them to take me to the next street along, yep, or whatever, and we'll stop and get the money. It'll be fine. After about 15 minutes of trying to convince the cab drivers of London to let me in without any money, quite understandably, none of them wanted to do it. One of them did take pity on me, drove me up to the top of the road near Highbury and Islington Station, went to a few more cash points, none of them were working, then he got frustrated and drove off, leaving me stranded. So again, another sort of 20 minutes this time, trying to desperately get into a cab to take me to where I needed to go. Eventually, a black cab driver took pity on me, and we must have, from Highbury and Islington all the way to Stamford Hill, I must have tried about 20 cash points,
right,
of all banks, of all kinds, but eventually
the
cab driver took pity on me and sort of saw that I wasn't going to be able to give him any money, wrote his name and his address down on a piece of paper and said, you have to send me a cheque, son.
And was it anything to do with the clocks changing?
I still haven't really been able to get to the bottom of it, really. But it did seem to be happening. Well, after a quick look on Twitter, it seemed to be happening in a lot of places across the UK.
If you know anything more about that, let us know about it on Twitter. Fill us in on all the details. This week, you've downloaded an audiobook from Audible, haven't you? David Mitchell's book.
I have, actually. My free audiobook. And you know
it's
what?
Good job it was free. You couldn't pay for anything.
I've been really enjoying it. It's 9.5 hours long of hearing David Mitchell talk about his life, which may not be to everyone's taste, but it's the first ever audiobook I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
And this is me being genuine, regardless of the fact that we've got to plug it.
Yeah.
I will definitely download more.
I've got the iPartridge one today. If you want to take advantage of this offer, go to audible.co.uk/goingup. It's a free 1 month trial. You get a free audiobook. You need to go to audible.co.uk/goingup. You get to pick.
Can we do an audiobook?
By the length of this opening, probably yes. This might be one. 80,000 audiobooks for you to pick from, and then if you don't want to pay a monthly fee afterwards, you can cancel any time, etc. So go to audible.co.uk/goingup. Loads of football books on there. Later, if you entered our Football Manager competition last week, we'll be announcing the winners of that later in the show. And we're going to be speaking to Notts County fan and sports journalist Paul Smith after the Magpies dropped to the bottom of League One. They lost 1-0 to Preston on Saturday. They responded by sacking Chris Kawamia. First, though, we're going to start with another managerial departure. The news broke about this just as we started recording last week. Tony Mowbray leaving Middlesbrough, a club legend at the Riverside, but he had to go after a run of just 24 points from 33 league games. Mark Venus, his assistant, long-term Borough fan, took charge against Doncaster on Friday and won 4-0. Easy lark, this management stuff. Let's speak to Anthony Vickers, sports writer for the Evening Gazette on Teesside and the author of the very popular Untypical Borough blog. We had him on the show last season. season, and we're delighted to say that he's back on the line right now to talk to us about a very eventful week at the Riverside. Anthony, let's start with Mowbray first. You and your paper helped break the story about him losing his job. You wrote that it was sad but no surprise. Was that the sense among the fans too, that a change was needed as much as they love Tony Mowbray as a player?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a bereavement in the family, because I think Tony Mowbray embodied a certain aspect of the club, which is the escape from liquidation in 1986. He was an inspirational leader on the pitch. And for a lot of people, before that, there'd been very low crowds. But during this revival, crowds went up to about 20,000. So there's an entire generation that had a really strong emotional bond with that team. And he personifies that team. And when he was away, it was always understood that one day he would come back and manage the club. So, you know, him arriving was like a...
Watford have just scored. Watford have just scored.
Him arriving back at the club was as kind of a destiny fulfilled. So it was fated almost. And no one likes to interfere with stuff like that. And he ticks so many boxes, it's unbelievable. You know, he understands the DNA of the club. He's very passionate about the bond with the supporters. He's committed to playing a certain style of football, attacking football, passing football, entertaining football. And I think everyone really, really wanted it to work. But at the end of the day, it's a results-driven business, and the team went into the game at the weekend having only won five games in 2013. And that stretches everyone's patience. And having spent money in the summer, I mean, there was the understanding before was there's a lot of leeway because he was working with other people's players and had no money. But having spent money in the summer, and it was his team, suddenly you run out of excuses and there's no mitigation anymore, and it comes down to the harsh reality of results.
Anthony, apologies for my outburst during your very good answer there. But so why has it gone so badly wrong, particularly in this calendar year? As you say, only five victories, and it just, you know, the results just weren't forthcoming at all. What went wrong for Tony Mowbray in the end?
That's really, I think there's a cocktail of things. Depending on what your perspective, if you're hostile to Tony Mowbray, you point to the man. I think one of the problems was that perhaps they overachieved in the first half of the season, and they did it with playing a certain brand of football with a lot of relatively inexperienced players. And of course, when you're winning, everything's fantastic and you get the extra 10% out of people. And the injuries mounted up, and a couple of defeats piled on top of each other, and it was an absolute abysmal January and February. And I think morale went, and I think a lot of the younger players never really had faced been in a situation where they, you know, hadn't won a game in eight. And there was a lot of responsibility on those players, and I don't think a lot of them were mentally equipped to deal with it. And then a very glaring problem became obvious, which was there was no leaders on the pitch. And there was no one. There was no nasty, shouty, pointy, sweary guy to drive them in midfield and grab the game by the throat. And there was no real strong leadership at the back as well, which was quite surprising, because they had relatively experienced players, you know, the likes of Jonathan Woodgate and that. But there was no shouting, no pointing, no organising. And it became almost a habit that when the goal went in, heads went down. And by that point, they'd chopped and changed so much. I just don't think they could come up with a formula. And to be honest, I think a couple of months from the end of the season, it was almost an acceptance that it was drifting, and it was a case of, well, let's just get this out of the way and start the rebuild in the summer.
I was going to say, was the defeat at Barnsley, with the reaction of the fans a couple of weeks ago, was that the final straw?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the first time there's been any vocal opposition to Tony Mowbray. At home, we've drawn far, far too many games, and it's been very, very frustrating. But generally, they've played well in the games. You know, they've got ahead and then leaked stupid goals. But you could see in flashes that there was a decent team there. And there'd been a lot of booing at the end, and there'd been a lot of pointing at individual players, but at no point had anyone ever turned on Mowbray. So when it happened at Barnsley, with quite a big away following, there's over 2,000 people there, it was very, very audible. And it was very marked, and it was the first time it had happened. And if you know the configuration of Barnsley, the tunnel's very near the away end. And when they were trooping off at half time, there was a lot of discontent. And the chairman and all the upper echelons of the club were there to watch that and hear that. And I think that kind of, you can't put the genie back in the bottle and that sort of thing.
Well, I read an interview with Steve Gibson where he said that, you know, he was booing as well, or he would have been.
I think that was tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I was sat behind him, and he certainly wasn't, but he was very, very stony-faced, you know. But it strikes, you know, he's striking a chord there. I mean, he's reacting like a fan. And sometimes you think, well, you don't want your chairman to react like a fan. You want him to be a hard-headed businessman. But it's, a mark of Steve Gibson that, you know, he's backed Tony Mowbray through some difficult times over the last couple of years. And he's not, by nature, a knee-jerker. But I think results compounded with what looked like the fans had come. I think he's taking swift action.
I mean, you're quite right to say that he's not a knee-jerk chairman. He's had managers in the job for several years at a time. So how long do you think he'll take over the appointment of the next man to take over Riverside?
Well, he made it clear to us that he was going to get the right man. That was the important thing. He wasn't going to rush into anything. Mark Venus, you know, you've got a couple of games to make me think about something. Obviously, he'd be inundated with agents' phone calls and faxes and CVs, but he wants to get the right fit. And the important thing there is getting someone that's comfortable with the style of play that we have now and who can take on the squad that we've got now. He gave us the definite impression that if Mark Venus could get results and a 4-0 win in the debut is not bad. If he can keep that going, then they're happy to put off the decision until they get the right man. He said that he had some people in mind, but also he would wait and see who applied. And he also said, which is quite a revolutionary concept on Teesside, is that you wouldn't be adverse this time to looking abroad to a foreign manager.
Which is interesting, because I believe Carl was just looking at the odds before we went on air, and I saw Carranca, former Real Madrid, Mourinho's assistant at Real Madrid, former Real Madrid player, no less, is currently favourites with some of the bookies. Yeah, which would be a real kind of left field appointment for a club like Middlesbrough.
I'm very wary of the bookies' odds. It's a very funny market. It's very easy to manipulate it. All it takes is one big bet somewhere, and the computers start slashing the odds automatically. Then other people think there's a rabbit on and put a tenner on just in case. We've had a whole series now of red hot favourites. Tony Pulis was red hot favourite. Mike Phelan was red hot favourite. And these stories almost take on a momentum of their own. They drive the odds ridiculously. Carranca has been mentioned, but not in context of being a manager. The club are trying to set up several, like a network around Europe of people who are very well connected. And Peter Kenyon has a role at the club in putting together this network. And Carranca is, you know, it's more a case of his knowledge and contacts in Spain. And we quite often have people appearing at the Riverside in that context. We've had Alan Boxick, for instance. And again, that was a similar sort of thing. They're trying to exploit his knowledge and contacts. If Alan Boxick had turned up this week, it's almost certain that he would be odds-on favourite tomorrow for the job.
In terms of the game on Friday, for anyone who watched it on TV, they'll be wondering what all the problems have been about, because it was a 4-0 victory against Doncaster. Brilliant goal from Albert Doma for the first one. I read online that a Middlesbrough fan saying that the team played with the handbrake off on Friday, and he made six changes, didn't he, Mark Venus? What did you make of the performance and the way he changed it?
I think there was a definite idea that the shackles had been taken off them and they were liberated almost. I think that was partly helped by a couple of the changes that Venus made. One of the problems we've had all season is that the fullbacks have been weak. They've pushed forward a little bit too much because you know, the nature of the team is to attack. When they push forward, there's massive spaces open behind them, which have been exploited. In putting two people who are naturally centre-backs there, I think he made it a lot more rigid and solid. For one thing, so that plugged the gaps, but that also gave more licence for the wingers to get forward. And it was not just Adoma, but Carriol on the other side were both fantastic. They've got speed, they offer width and pace and a bit of trickery. And, you know, we were creating a lot of chances. To be fair, it has been like that all season. The last home match was a 4-1 win. A couple of weeks ago was a 3-3 draw. You know, we scored two away at Forest, two away at Wigan. Scoring goals has never been the problem. The problem has always been keeping the ball out. And what's happened is that we've got a goal usually and had a lot of chances, not quite put them away, and then the opposition score because of weak marking, usually from a set piece. So I think the most interesting thing, although the goals look fantastic and then we all dance and celebrate, the most interesting thing, there was a clean sheet there. And although there was a little rocky spell, generally they looked rigid at the back. I think for a lot of Borough fans, we'll see that as a big step forward.
I find it interesting when an assistant like Mark Venus, who's been so heavily associated with Tony Mowbray, all of a sudden, you know, gets the reins to take control of the team and makes changes and seems to do things differently. So, you know, I wonder, was he suggesting these changes when he was still there, or has he sort of had to bite his tongue when, you know, to go along with what Mowbray wanted? You know, you can make the comparison with the team that ended Mowbray's reign, Barnsley last season, when Keith Hill was sacked and David Flitcroft took over, a man who was associated very, you know, in a very similar way that Venus and Mowbray have a partnership. And, you know, Flitcroft took the job and inspired them to safety. Do you think we could see the same sort of thing at Middlesbrough? Could Venus step out the shadow of Mowbray and take it forward?
Possibly. I think it comes down to a personality thing as much as anything. I mean, Tony Mowbray is a very studious, academic coach. You know, he's a tactician. He thinks very much about his shape and what he wants his players to do. I think Venus shares Tony Mowbray's general philosophy on how to set a team up and how to play. But I think his personality is a little bit more overt about making demands on the players. And I think basically he put a rocket under them and told them to get out there and do what they do best. And, you know, with the best will in the world, Doncaster are not the strongest team in the division. How he will set out against a stronger team, we're yet to see. But I think basically what he's done is he's gone through them and then told them all to buck up. They've got to take some responsibility for what's happened to Mogger and get out there and make it right. And I think most Borough fans would notice that rather than the first 15 or 20 minutes, very cagey shadow boxing, that Borough actually went for it right from the off.
I mean, already Mark Venus has been able to stamp a bit of authority on the team, Anthony, it seems. He's not afraid to kind of mix things up as well. So he must have a very, very good shot of taking charge full time.
I think it comes down to results, doesn't it? I mean, that's always the case. The general feeling around the club was that the team isn't that far away. It wasn't far away from clicking. The balance is just about right, and we needed a central defender. Well, we've brought a central defender in now, so maybe that's one box ticked. If Venus is the man that can get them to click, even if it's just by shouting at them a bit and sending them out with a rocket at them, then maybe, you know, we'll see exactly what it was that Tony Mowbray was feeling towards. And it comes down to results. I mean, if he wins the next three or four, he'd be a very brave chairman to change it.
Anthony, I was going to ask you a question. Not seeing, you know, Middlesbrough play obviously week in, week out like you do, you'd be able to tell me how is the Middlesbrough, the famed Middlesbrough Academy, getting on these days? So obviously they've, you know, got a very proud history over the last sort of 15 or so years of bringing through players that have gone on to play for the first team and you know, gone on to bigger and better things in some cases. Is that still, you know, very much the ethos at the club?
Oh, very much. I mean, the chairman went out of his way to finance the club to be a Category 1 academy when, at a time, given the prudence elsewhere in the club and, you know, lack of money for transfers for Tony Mowbray, it would have been a very easy saving to make and say, oh, we're not going to push for this. But actually, he's went out of his way to be a Category 1 academy, so we're on a level with the Premier League. The benefits there are obviously more contact time, more ability to recruit players, more ability to stop other teams luring away your best people. There's been a bit of a downturn in the last couple of years in terms of actually producing things, because it's not like a factory. You can't just churn them out on a regular basis. A lot of it comes down to luck. And we had a very good group 10 years ago and another good group about 5 years ago. The last 2 years have been quiet, but the coaches are very, very positive about two or three of the lads who are now 18. We've got a couple in the England under-18 squad, a couple in the under-17s. The next batch seemed to be very, very promising. Bryn Morris was a target for Manchester United in the summer, and it was only the fact that Borough were a Category 1 academy that stopped them luring him away. But the club have very high hopes for him.
Just before you go, Anthony, another question on Tony Mowbray. I know his name was sung, wasn't it, around the Riverside by the fans, yeah, on Friday night. They've obviously still got huge affection for him. If you were to sum up the sort of Mowbray era, when you look back at the time he's been manager over the last couple of years, what is his legacy?
Here, hopefully, his legacy will be that we see in 3 or 4 months' time that the team that he put together in the summer is actually going to deliver. I would hope that would be the legacy. Certainly, the long-term legacy will be that he was the man that sorted out the financial mess and worked miracles, really, to get through 2 years when I think his transfer spending was a minus £9 million over the first 2 years. Cut wages, balanced the books, put the club on a an even keel, rebuild the infrastructure behind the scenes. And these are all things you don't see on a match day. You know, fans don't go to cheer good housekeeping and budgetary discipline. But at the end of the day, that's what puts teams out on the pitch, is your ability to balance the books. And what he's done over the first 2 years he was here, I think, will have a significant impact on the way Borough pan out over the next couple of years.
Brilliant. Thanks for coming on and speaking to us about it, Anthony. Good to talk to you as ever.
No problem, mate.
That is Anthony Vickers, a sports writer for the Evening Gazette on Teesside, the author of the very popular Untypical Borough blog. You can read that at antonyvickers.boroughblogs.co.uk. Next, we're going to be talking about another managerial change, this time at Meadow Lane. So, quick score update.
DC?
We're winning 1-0.
1-0? Who got that goal? I've just glanced
Sean
up and
Murray,
saw it.
In the third minute of the game, great shot from distance, took a slight deflection, went inside the near post. We're playing quite well.
I mind your attempt to kind of be professional about it, but it kind of went out the window, didn't it?
Yeah.
So if you had DC squeal again in just a second, it might be a second goal. Let's move into League One then. As I mentioned, Otter Meadow Lane, 1-0 defeat at home to Preston on Saturday's left Notts County, 2 points adrift at the bottom of the division. They're already 5 points off safety, and those statistics have in the end done for the manager, Chris Kouamia, who's been sacked after just 8 months in charge. Meaning, by my calculations, they're on the lookout for their 7th permanent manager in just 4 years. To find out more about what on earth is going on, let's speak to Notts County fan and sports journalist Paul Smith, who's written for the Football League paper and the Grimsby Telegraph, amongst others. Paul, thank you very much for coming on the show. Let's start with Chris Kouamia's departure. Had this sacking been a long time coming, or should he have been given a bit more time? What do you reckon?
Definitely a long time coming, yeah. I mean, we go back actually to when the appointment was made, really. He came in after Keith Kerr was, to some extent, harshly sacked in February of this year. And he came in a caretaker capacity, and there wasn't an upturn in results immediately, and it was quite a surprise, actually, when he was then given the job on a permanent basis, initially to the end of last season, and then before the end of last season, it was then confirmed that he'd carry on into this season. But he's not once really given the fans any indication that he was ever going to be a good manager. And towards the end of last season, we had a couple of decent results right at the very end, but we sort of stumbled over the finishing line to a mediocre mid-table finish. And then the start of this season, well, we've just won the two games in the league, and we've not even been able to sort of eke out any draws. It's been a losing sequence, and the players just don't look like they've really played for him all along. And I think the writing's been on the wall for probably probably 5 or 6 weeks now, and a lot of fans wanted him out quite a while ago, and the inevitable sort of happened on Saturday.
Paul, I've just listened to an interview that the chief executive of Notts County, Jim Rodwell, gave to the media in the wake of the decision to sack Kouamia. And, you know, he said that himself and the rest of the board of directors are taking their share of the blame for appointing Kouamia and for the poor start to this season. And he just offered up a series of very hollow sort of platitudes, really, is to say, well, yeah, we haven't really appointed the right manager over the last 3 or 4 goes. We've been doing a lot of soul searching, which for me is more worrying. You know, the most worrying thing, if I was a Notts County fan, is you've got a man who's admitting that he's no good at appointing a manager, saying that I'm going to have to go and try and appoint another one.
Absolutely right, yeah. I think with regards to the chief executive, again, not a lot of fans have too much time for him. If you go back over the club's appointments since the current regime came in, which is Jim Rodwell and as chief executive and the owner Ray True, it goes back to the 09-10 season. They came in February, and to be fair, given that they saved the club after the disaster of Monto Finance coming in and spending money that we didn't have, and Sven Jornelis and Sol Campbell and all the rest of it. And they made an appointment then of Steve Cotterill, who came in and was absolutely outstanding for us and took us up, won us the league. I think he only lost one game out of about 15. It was exceptional. But once he left in that summer, since then, every appointment that they've made hasn't worked out, well, or started to look like it might
I've got a list of them here. Shall we go through them all then? After Steve Cotterill, by the way, he lost one in 18 games, 77% win rate.
18, that's right.
That's outstanding. Craig Short lasted from June 2010 to October 2010. Paul Ince from October 2010 to April 2011. And then you've got Martin Allen from April 2011 to February 2012. Keith Curl from February 2012 to February 2013. And then Chris Kouamia from February this year to now. So whoever the next manager is, he's probably not going to be there for too long.
Exactly, and the fans crave stability, and you know, it's a word that's used a lot, and obviously people, you know, teams like Chelsea have shown that it's not always the way. I mean, they've had stability and they've managed to win trophies, but I think
they have had some very good players and hundreds of millions of pounds in the bank.
Exactly, and I think, you know, clubs, you know, teams at our level, stability is certainly more important, because you need to get the foundations in place in terms of bringing in young players, because the money isn't there and that kind of thing. And not many managers have been given a chance. The trouble is, Kawamia, I think, was the one that they've sort of realised we do need to give a manager a chance, but he was just the wrong guy to give it to. And you know, if you look at the previous appointments, Keith Kerr, and to an extent someone like Martin Allen, although we believe it might have been sort of off-the-pitch things that got him sacked, they were sort of on the right track. They had a couple of bad results, but they got their contracts terminated quite early, whereas with regards to Kawamia, they seemed to be wanting to give him a chance, but he actually deserved to go, which was bizarre, really, because, you know, others didn't deserve to go, and they sort
Martin Allen's without a job at the moment, so...
Yeah, he might come back, and Steve Cotterill's one of the heavily linked favourites. But you look at Keith Kerr as well, when he was kicked out of the door, I think you guys were 10th. So yeah. It does strike me that the chairman and the chief executive don't really know what they want from it. They're kind of punching above their weight. They've got ideas above their station and what they think the club can achieve. And then when it comes to trying to appoint a manager, they know they can't lure necessarily big names, quote unquote. So they went with Chris Kwame, but they would have just been better off keeping Keith Curl in the first place to avoid what's happened in the past 6 months.
They're not going to be able to get a top manager in League Two, are they? So
you are. I mean, it's very worrying that their record is very worrying. You just don't know who they are going to appoint next. And, you know, this is probably their most crucial appointment, I suggest. The next one has got to be right, because, like you said, we're heading back to League Two unless they get it right. I think Martin Allen is good for a crisis, but he's not the man for us at the moment. And like I said, I think something happened off the pitch that would mean that he wouldn't come back anyway. But the next appointment is key. It's absolutely crucial.
I'm just looking at your squad. You've got the likes of Enoch Shawamny in there, Yohan Arquin. You've got Alan Sheehan. You've got some good players in there. Whoever gets the job, have they got the quality to work with, or am I massively overrating this squad?
I wouldn't say massively. I mean, there are some good players, and I do think, and it's quite hard saying this, because like I said, we've only won twice in the league. We are rock bottom and five adrift already of safety. But there are some performances this season that we haven't got the results that we deserve. Even on Saturday, I mean, the press and players and fans have said it themselves. It was probably a draw would have been fair, and I mean, they're fourth in the table. We went to Gillingham midweek and we were by far the better team, but lost 2-1. We're lacking sort of a strike force, but there are a clutch of players there. But there seems to be a sense that the players haven't quite played for the manager a little bit. I think they've let him down, and while the manager has, you know, got us. I would take a lot of the blame, because he brought half of the players in, more than half the players in. I do think it's quite easy always to castigate a manager when it's the players themselves who aren't really performing, and a lot of those players have got a lot to answer for, because there are experienced players in there, and there are good players in there who will probably get into a lot of the teams near the top of the table. The likes of Dean Leacock at centre-half is an excellent player at this level. Alan Sheehan, Danny Haynes, who we brought in on big money in the summer, scored goals in the Championship last season. He's just not got going at all. So there are some good players, and Bart Miłkowski in goals, he's arguably the best goalkeeper in the division. So, you know, the players have got to take a long, hard look at themselves as well.
Given the state of the club, the fans would probably have been expecting Chris Kwame's sacking for several weeks now, and therefore have been kind of mulling over who they would want to replace Kwame. Danny Wilson currently stands as favourite, as odds on, but outside of that, there isn't a great deal of choice. I think Brian Kerr currently stands at second favourite, a man who last spent his managerial career in the Faroe Islands after he left the Republic of Ireland, of course. So what do you reckon the fans kind of want? Who do they want, and what they kind of are hoping for in terms of a manager, in terms of names?
Yeah, well, speaking to a few fans, speaking to my family, and that's fans as well, my brother and my dad, we're sort of lacking inspiration as to who we'd get in. I mean, you always get the sort of usual suspects. Who are out of jobs, who are constantly linked, but none of them are particularly inspiring, because there's a reason they're sort of out of jobs. A few of the fans on Twitter and on message boards are suggesting going for a sort of coach that's proven themselves elsewhere, and it's, you know, such as League Two, like a few names like Gary Rowett at Burton, who's done a decent job, Paul Cox, who's an ex-Notts County player at Mansfield, who got them promoted, Steve Burr at Kidderminster, who's doing well, and they seem to be sort of the names that a few of the fans seem to want. Myself, I'd quite like Steve Cotterill to come back because of that excellent record that he had before. But then again, he's not done too great since he left the club. So it's difficult, and I think there's a lack of really inspiring names to come in. So I don't envy the chairman.
I was just about to say that, because in this situation, I mean, it is their own fault for appointing the wrong manager, but. Yeah. In this situation, if they go for an unknown name or a manager that's doing really well in the conference or whatever, and you know, that can generate excitement, oh, we've gone for someone a bit different. But if it goes wrong, and everyone will be going, why the hell didn't we get an experienced manager in?
Exactly. And I think it's crying out for a little bit of experience. Personally, I think it's crying out for somebody who knows this level. But, you know, it's hard to find. And Danny Wilson, like you say, is the favourite. I mean, he's done okay at this level. I think he got Swindon in the playoffs, he got Sheffield United in the playoffs, but ultimately he always ended up getting really soon after and not getting them up. So I don't know if he's quite a might man either. So it's difficult, and I'm scratching my head around to think of who would come in and do a good job, but hopefully there is somebody out there.
It's all well and good appointing somebody with experience, but all too often clubs like Notts County appoint people with experience of being average or worse. So you've got to have someone who's actually experienced at being good, and which is why I think they'd be much better placed, even though he hasn't managed at this level before, going for someone like Paul Cox, you know, just down the road at Mansfield, who's done a good job, and somebody with you know, optimism, someone who's got perhaps a bit more enthusiasm about them and is on the rise, rather than someone that's just sort of been milling around at different sort of clubs and not really pulling up many trees.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and I think Paul Cox has clearly done a decent job at Mansfield, although I suggested his name just in passing, not as a favourite for me who wanted him, but a few of the other fans who, obviously, because we know Mansfield quite well, being a local club, apparently, you know, he had quite a bit of money at Mansfield, the biggest budget in the conference to get them up, and he seems to make quite a lot of signings and perhaps doesn't play the greatest football, not necessarily saying that we need to play good football, because we are quite playing good football at the moment and not winning, but there's reservations with Paul Cox as well. So it's very, very difficult at the moment to know who's the best man. A few people have fancifully suggested Neil Warnock because he was a past manager of ours in the early 90s.
He's a past manager of everyone.
That's true, yeah, and that's sort of a romantic upon, but I don't think that would ever happen. I think he's well retired now, so I think that's a long shot, and he'd probably want a bit too much money.
Until he ends up at Palace this week.
I was going to say, I'd be very... you know, Neil Warnock, I can assure you, would come back into football for the right club, but I'd be astonished if that right club would be Notts County.
I think you're right there. Can I just say sort of one final question before you go, Paul? A lot of people, the only time they will have seen Notts County this season was when you played away at Liverpool in the Capital One Cup on the TV.
Or indeed in the first game of the Football League season this year on the Friday night.
That's true, against Sheffield United. But for the people who saw the Liverpool game, they might sort of be struggling to think you're talking about the same side they watched put up such a spirited performance. Was that just a complete one-off?
Yeah. It wasn't a complete one-off. In fact, we've been on TV three times already this season, which is a rarity. In all three occasions, we've actually done a decent account of ourselves at Sheffield United on the opening day. We had a man sent off, which wasn't helpful, but was on for the Johnson's Paint Trophy at Wolves a couple of weeks ago, and we won on penalties, but we were excellent over the 90 minutes, and they're a side sitting in second, big side like that, and we absolutely dominated them. So there has been some good performances. I mean, the Liverpool's obviously stand out, taking them to extra time, scoring a couple of goals. But there have been some good performances. There are some good players there. Can we get the right manager to knit it together and get us out of trouble? That's the question.
Okay, we'll have to wait and see. Cheers for coming on, Paul. We appreciate that. We'll watch the space closely for the next appointment. That's Paul Smith, sports journalist, big Notts County fan who's written for the Football League paper and the Grimsby Telegraph, amongst others. Right now, it's time for the latest in our My Club series. Remember, we're giving fans of all Football League sides 125 seconds to tell us about their club, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League.
This is We Are Going Up. My club in 125 seconds.
My name is Jared Lauera and my team is Queen's Park Rangers.
OK, Jawad, so your first QPR game, the first time you ever went to Loftus Road, can you remember what it was?
Actually, I can't remember. I was 3 years old and I have no recollection of my first game whatsoever.
I think 3 years is a record so far this season for the youngest person. Is. What about your favourite ever player, though, Jawad, to ever grace Loftus Road?
Probably Adel Taarabt, the season that we went up 3 years ago. He was unplayable at times.
Tell us about the last day of the season in the Premier League a couple of years ago. How nervous were you in the last couple of minutes when Manchester City scored twice?
It was probably the most memorable QPR game that I've ever been to, even though we ended up losing 2-1 up with 2 minutes left. We thought there's no way that we can lose this game now. And there was about a minute, I think, between them scoring their first goal and the Bolton result coming through. So that minute or so was probably the worst feeling I've had as a QPR fan.
who was the worst manager of the ill-fated reign of Flavio Briatore as chairman?
Tough question, because there were so many of them.
Plenty to pick from.
Probably Paul Hart, even though he was only there for 3 or 4 games, I think. There was one game against Barnsley where we ended up at full-time with eight defenders on the pitch, and we were hanging on for dear life against Barnsley at home. So I think most QPR fans would say him.
And finally, are you going to get promoted to the Premier League this season?
If you'd asked me before Saturday, probably would have said yes. However, I thought...
Doubt has arrived.
Saturday, yeah, the performance Saturday, there was a few concerns for me, I think. I think a couple of players just looked disinterested. And it'll be interesting to see how they react on Wednesday. If they can get a positive result then I think it'll be all right. But if a rut sets in, then... I'm not sure how that squad is going to react to it.
You'll be all right. Harry will sort you out. Don't worry.
Gerard.
Hopefully, yeah.
Your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So we'll have another one of those next week. Now, I'm going to let you in behind the scenes, as it were. We've just taken a little break because we were arranging how we were going to do the draw for this Football Manager competition. And all hell has broken loose in the Brighton-Watford game, as it is right now. As it still is, the ball's flying around the penalty.
Get in the goal!
Anyway, so you will have heard this at the top of the show, but here's what's just happened a couple of minutes ago as Watford have gone forward and thought they should have a second goal.
That was over the line.
What's just happened?
It was over the line. I can see it from here. This is why we should have bloody Hawkeye in the championship. It was over the line.
It was definitely over.
Of course it was clearly over the line.
Replay.
The referee was yards away.
Replay.
What was the linesman that was hardly obstructed?
Should have kept it out, that defender.
Gordon Grace
really
keep it
up. It's a goal over.
It's a goal
over.
It's a goal.
And then inevitably down the other end, Andrew Crofts. So as we begin our weekend review, it's 1-1.
Terrible, terrible corner. It's an awful.
Come
corner.
On, mind on the job. Mind on the job. Let's start at the top of the championship
Bruno
this week.
Was really annoying me.
I think it's just you and me,
I think it is. I'm just going to fade him down. Burnley 2, Queen's Park Rangers 0. As we were just talking about with Jawad, there 7 wins in a row for Burnley. QPR's unbeaten run ended, and the interchange in the link-up between Sam Vokes and Danny Ings for that first goal was absolutely phenomenal, wasn't it? Superb goal, and Burnley, the juggernaut continues.
7 in a row.
Yeah.
Amazing. Utterly amazing. And as you say, I mean, everything that we talked about and praised them for last week, it can very much carried on. And you know, QPR were looking in ominous form, weren't they, until that 2-0 draw with Millwall. But now it's Burnley who are very much the team to beat in the championship. And it is, you know, against all real, you know,
convention,
conceived wisdom, yeah. And they're doing really well.
Well, here's Jerry Barton's tweet from the weekend. Congratulations to Burnley, thoroughly deserved all 3 points today. Nowhere near good enough from us. What's important now is the reaction to the defeat. It makes Wednesday night's game in hand at Wigan vital.
That's very sensible from Jerry Barton. But yeah, seems he got hit around the head by a Coke bottle.
Exactly, hit with a bottle of Coke.
He did.
I don't think QPR have much worry about. Jawad there was a little bit worried now, but their season will derail after a couple of dodgy performances. The quality of that squad, that's not going to happen. If they don't get promotion, having seen the start they've had, then that would be a performance in itself.
I did quite like this tweet we got from Jim, the Millwall fan in Australia. So since I've started listening to We Are Going Up and put QPR defenders in my fantasy team, they've conceded 4 goals.
Yeah, you won't be the only one.
Hashtag kiss of death.
I've done that. I've put 2 extra ones in recent weeks. Oh, well.
Did you hear this story from Saturday? The only bad news for Burnley was that their mascot was sent off, apparently. I've heard of managers being sent to the stands. The mascot was sent to the stand.
What did he do?
He sort of indicated that the linesman needed a new pair of glasses.
So close.
Mind on the show. He indicated that the linesman needed a new pair of glasses, apparently.
Right.
And the referee gave him his marching orders. So I hope that clip's on YouTube. Elsewhere, the top of the championship, Leicester City 2, Bournemouth 1. Leicester 6 home wins in a row. And they're up to second. They go ahead of QPR with that 2-1 win at the weekend. David Nugent and Jamie Vardy with the goals. So they're Ryan Alsop, the Bournemouth goalkeeper. He needed to do what Joe Hart did, actually, because he should easily have got to that to that ball. But Leicester's home form is really sort of keeping them right up there.
Yeah, Jamie Vardy keeps improving, and that was another good goal. Jim was waxing lyrical about him last time.
Same amount of goals as he had last season. I know he had a few injuries last
Nugent
year.
Scores. It wasn't a penalty, was it?
No.
Nugent scores on not from the spot.
You've seen it though, haven't you?
No.
Your birthday weekend means...
I've been focusing on the lower ends. I've been watching League 2 and League 1. I'm not caught up with all the championships.
Okay, we'll let you off. I can tell you this in terms of the championship. There's only one team in that division and one team out of all 92 in England now, professional teams after Sunderland's win on Sunday, that have not won a match in the league this season. And that team is Sheffield Wednesday, who drew 1-1 again. For like, I don't know, the seventh time or something stupid this season. 1-1 at Barnsley at the weekend, a result which neither team really favoured, either team, but a couple of very special goals in there.
Yeah, very much. Some excellent volleys. Matt Fryer in particular was an excellent goal. Dave Jones did what Dave Jones does best and blames the referee.
Well,
but
he did have a point.
He did have a point this week, because that was a blatant handball as well. Although, I mean, the way the season is now ticking along and managerial departures are starting to come in thick and fast, one would assume Dave Jones may not be in his hot seat next week, but then I wouldn't necessarily blame Dave Jones. I think the problem lies at the door of Roger Johnson, who has been relegated for the last three seasons, of course, with Birmingham City, and then two seasons consecutively with Wolves. And he's on loan at Sheffield Wednesday.
Well, I'll tell you what,
maybe they just got rid of him, then things would start to turn around.
Looking at the next seven games, Reading, Derby, they're both doing quite well. Huddersfield are up in ninth now. Blackpool have been doing brilliantly. Leicester, who's in second. Forest have been doing well. And then Watford. So... he might be gone by the end of that stretch of results, you'd think. Okay, elsewhere in the Football League, League One, Leighton Orient's unbeaten run. DC ended by Coventry in midweek.
Coventry, who are absolutely flying, aren't they?
Another win against Walsall on Saturday.
Yeah.
A lot has been said about the whole 10-point deduction thing as well, but let's just remember, they've only got 14 senior players, Coventry. So the work that Stephen Presley's done is quite incredible. Although Leighton Orient, they did have Kevin Lisby missing, I believe.
They did, and he got the winner.
I mean, that pairing up front for Leighton Orient, we just spoken a moment ago about pairing up front for Burnley, of course, in Sam Vokes and Danny Ings as well. But it just proves that, you know, if you have a decent pairing up front, they're going to be, you know, a
who would have
force
thought,
to be reckoned with.
Who would have thought? Peterborough did lose. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, old Callum Wilson was doing one of those Twitter Q&As today.
Oh, yeah.
On at SkyBetFL, hashtag Ask Callum. I'm just trying to pick out some of the...
good hashtag.
Some of the... There we go. Right, okay. So Scott Weymouth asked Callum, what's the best bit of advice you've been given and who was it from? And Callum responded, Clive Platt advised me to read a book called Bounce by Matthew Syed. I've read it. It's very good. It helped my mentality after my injury problems.
Nice.
Which is interesting. Oh, this is a good one. Snog, marry, avoid on Carl Baker, Stephen Presley and Stern John. Callum has bottled it and has said, avoid all. If you had to do it, what should you do?
What are the options again?
Right, so Carl Baker.
I don't know what he looks like.
Stephen Presley.
Right, okay.
Stern John.
I would avoid Stephen Presley.
Rough Scottish man, you know.
Marry Stern John. What was the other one? Carl Baker.
Snogging Carl Baker.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Dave, good. But Mark thought long and hard about that as well.
You got to put thought into these things. Carl?
Avoid. I think that's the easier answer.
DC?
I'd
he's thinking about it as well.
Yeah. I quite like the thought of marrying Stern John.
Yeah, I think
the
so.
The other two, I don't know. Toss a coin.
Okay, right. Shall we move
happy
on?
To have either of them.
Can we move on, please? Sheffield United have appointed Nigel Clough as their new manager, and they won 3-1 against Crewe, who are in 22nd, by the way. They're having a very difficult second season in League One. Nigel Clough appointed as the new manager, as we thought, and I think pretty much everyone said it, but a very good appointment.
And he's under no illusions of the task that he mentions, that he's got a squad full of young players, and it's going to now be a season of transition. But I think their next three league games are all against teams in the bottom half. So, given they've already picked up one victory, if they do pick up a couple, you know, that's not a guarantee, but if they do, then all of a sudden they'll have bounced into the mid-table, and who knows where their season could go from there.
Down the other end of the table, DC, Bristol City have finally won a game. They won 4-2 at Carlisle. Didn't realise, by the way, Pascal Chimbonda plays for Carlisle now.
He certainly does. Yeah.
Was wearing gloves as well, standard. And obviously a massive win for Sean O'Driscoll because there were 21 games without a win. And then there was that incident, wasn't there, after the 2-1 home defeat to Brentford in midweek with the radio. Was it the Radio Bristol or certainly
it was BBC
local,
Radio Bristol reporter. And he'd spent about 6 or 7 minutes talking to Sean O'Driscoll. And Sean O'Driscoll does like to go on if you've ever seen any of his post-match interviews. And he went into some great depth and detail as to what was going on, as to what he was going to do to put it right. And then the fateful and one more from me question came, have you got the strength for this job? To which O'Driscoll looked at him incredulously and said, stupid question,
And awkward then, silence the, immediately
the,
after
the,
that.
The presenter floundered. He floundered and tried to re-ask the question in more feeble terms. And O'Driscoll, I thought he was going to hit him. Like, he just started waving his hands around. He was disgusted.
See, if that had happened on this show, we would have just edited it out.
It was brilliant. That's the really was priceless.
That is the problem of doing a live interview. But, I mean, he was very close, wasn't he, to getting sacked there. So that's a massive win. A hat-trick as well for J. Emmanuel Thomas, your drinking buddy.
And indeed. But it was interesting seeing the comments... Of John Pemberton, assistant manager, saying that, you know, he's a maverick and he's a player that we know can do these sort of things, and they're quite willing to tolerate the fact that he may not work hard enough for the team, he may not be good at all of the nitty gritty aspects of the game, but they want him in the team because they know he can do that.
Right, Port Vale then, 2-1 victory against Gillingham in League One this weekend. However, their Port Vale reporter Michael Bagley was not sat in the press box, he was sat in the stands because he's been, or rather the paper have been banned, I think it's the Sentinel, is it?
Sentinel, yeah.
For asking a few questions in the last couple of weeks, and this is a paper which campaigned heavily, I know, in the last couple of years when there was a lot of trouble there. And they've sort of claimed in an article today the banned paper that helped save Port Vale have been, they're not allowed in. This is all a story about the number of supporters who paid for a shirt which they've not had delivered. So it seems really petty when you say it like that.
Yeah.
But a similar thing has happened at Newcastle as well, hasn't it, this weekend up there. What do you make of football clubs banning local newspapers?
I just think it's a bit petty, a bit counterproductive. All right, mate, the days where clubs needed local newspapers more than the other way around are long gone. Like, you know, the local newspapers do need the clubs, and the clubs have got, you know, sophisticated media setups themselves. They don't necessarily need the local paper in the same way anymore. But I just think it's a shame because the local media is there to serve the local, you know, population of each area in a different way than will get covered by the nationals. Certainly, you know, in Newcastle, maybe it's a different story. But, you know, certainly when you get down to Port Vale, you know, they play a role there and they shouldn't be neglected. And I just think it's stupid, it's petty, and I don't see the point.
The chairman, who's got a ridiculous name, by the way, Mr. Norman Smurfwaite, who said that the paper needs to spend £10,000 a year for the privilege of providing readers coverage of Port Vale, and they've sort of said, well, we don't pay for it, we never paid for it before, and we're providing his business with free publicity 6 days of the week every week, and we don't know of any local newspaper in the country that has to pay for this kind of access. Have you got on his Twitter?
So if you're charging, so is he charging every single paper? So when the Nationals come along, does he charge them?
Well, if you go on his Twitter, it's ridiculous because he doesn't seem to have discovered how to get sort of turn off the caps lock button on his keypad, so every single tweet he sends to fans about this is in capital letters and it looks like he's shouting. It's well worth a look if you're on Twitter. League 2,
sorry, I'm just reading through this actually, and the Sentinel aren't going to back down on it either, they've come across, so I suspect this could be something that runs for weeks and
maybe shoot there. Why is he shooting there?
we need to wrap this up soon, don't we? Maybe we should try and get the paper, the journalists on next week, perhaps, and
get them on.
We'll look into that this week.
We won't charge you £10,000 either.
Oh yeah, even though you're not going to be here, right? Because you're going off to a Football Manager quiz. Yeah. Anyway,
speaking of which,
well, we're not there quite yet.
Okay,
Accrington Stanley have won two games this week.
Which just kind of makes a mockery of what we were saying.
Bristol Rovers in midweek, and then they won away.
But it
at
shows
Morecambe.
What you can do if you win two games, even. No matter how unlikely it seems, if you win two matches in a league such as League Two, or, you know, all of a sudden beliefs there and they're
so tight,
right, exactly.
In that league as
stupid,
well,
really, to write anyone off
between first and 13th for 6 points. I know it's still early days, but
well,
it's incredibly tight.
Those two wins for Accrington have really made it tight down the bottom as well, because there's only 6 points between the bottom eight teams, I think, if my maths is right. One of which, Bury, won a game at the weekend.
And you were there, so you were
a
good luck charm.
I was.
You should give up your job on the Saturday and make sure you're there every week.
2-1 win at Wickham, and at half time, I must be honest, I did think we were going to lose about 3-0 because it wasn't pretty in the first half. Wickham looked very dangerous when they went forward. I don't really know what happened to Wickham in the second half. They stopped playing, they allowed us to get on top. Danny Mayer, who we've got on loan, I think he's been alone at a few clubs, Sheffield Wednesday, on the left wing, had that fullback on toast. Wickham did go down to 10 men, but we were already on top by that stage. And there's nothing quite like a last-minute winner headed in from a corner.
There isn't.
Players right in front of me. Absolutely brilliant.
And what was your trip to Adams Park like, Mark? Is that the first time you'd been?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Did you enjoy the experience?
It's nowhere near the train station, because I got in at 10 to 3, so I had to get a taxi to the ground. It's like a 50-minute walk away. But it's a very picturesque little area. There's trees all around it. I'd recommend you make a trip sometime soon. Right, go on.
I don't plan on getting relegated this season, Swindon. No.
Are we getting on with this competition then? Let me find some dramatic music. Right, okay, let's try this then. Okay, so to win, how many copies have we got to give away?
Three.
Three copies of Football Manager 2014. Thanks to everyone who entered this week on the email. First of all, DC, the question was, remind
us. It was. Back in the 06-07 season, Chris Powell, now manager of Charlton, was playing for Watford in the Premier League. In the first game away from home against Everton, he was involved in a controversial incident. What was it?
Okay. And what was it? What's the answer?
It was towards the end of the game with the scores. I think it was 1-0 at the time to Everton. He slid in to try and block a cross from Tim Cahill. It hit him full on in the face. The referee gave a penalty to Everton, thus setting the tone for Watford's season. Everton went 2-0 up and won the game.
Okie dokie. So we've got all the entries now. We would have put them in a hat, but we haven't got a hat. Would you like to sort of shake to the microphone what you have got here?
Well, I've got my bag that I had my pre-pod burrito in.
You have? Yes. Okay, so would you like to draw three names out of the hat? Or Carl, do you want to draw them out?
I'll draw one,
Carl,
yeah.
You go around one. And help with the...
We'll draw one each, shall
okay.
we?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go first. Okay. I have a name.
And it is... Name number one.
Mark Birkwood.
Mark Birkwood, you've won a copy of Football Manager 2014. And I need another bong, don't I? Here we go.
Yeah, I've got a name.
We've got a name for the second.
You need another bong.
Clip that.
Winner number two is James Tennyson.
There you go.
Congratulations.
And was it two or three copies?
Three.
Three, sorry.
Come on, go. That's why I've given you the bag.
Sorry, my turn. It's Watford, go forward. Oh, nice music.
It's run out.
Oh, it's run out. Okay, it's the slick. And again. And the final winner is... Tension for no unnecessary reason there. The final winner is Mr. James Graham. I think you could tell I was reaching for that button, couldn't you? So well done to everyone who's won a copy of Football Manager 2014. We will be in touch to let you know. Well,
thanks to everyone who took part. It's amazing when you give something free away, how many people actually get in touch.
That is very true. You can find us on SoundCloud if you want to listen on there, soundcloud.com/wagyupodcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes as well. The website, if you want to read the blogs, wearegoingup.co.uk is where you go. And a reminder that if you go to audible.co.uk/goingup, you can take advantage of our special offer on there where you get a free audiobook and a free 1 month trial. What is the score? David Cameron Walker.
It is Brighton 1, Watford 1.
At the time we record this bit, a cross just gone in. There's 10 minutes to go. We're going to leave the mics.
We need to make some substitutions here. Anya's on the bench. You'd liven things up a little bit. Fabrini.
I'm going to fade him down. We're going to leave the microphones rolling. So if something does happen in the last 10 minutes, you will hear it after this. But we will speak to you next week.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
I want to win this game. Come on, Deanie, look, move. Get on your toes. Provide them with something to think about. Like that. Oh. Oh, Fabrini. Get up, Fabrini. We haven't got time for your nonsense. Good, good. Get in the goal! It's off the post. Oh. It's off the post.
Another one off the post.
Keep going. Lads. No, no. Oh, Almunia, what a save. Fantastic. Oh, like that. Just slip it back inside.
This is it.
He's done him. He's taken it. Come on. Penalty. Ref. Penalty. Oh, come on. Come on.
Never a pen. Never a pen.
It would have been a pen, wouldn't it, if the defender had fouled him like he was supposed to. Is it a dive? It is, isn't it, really? Come on. Oh, I can't believe this. Oh, no. No.
Fine. It's all fine.
It's not all fine, though, is it? Because we need to win these games. We were winning these games. We smashed them last season at their place. We still don't have anyone like Vidra last season who can run into space quickly. We do, I suppose. Anya, he's a winger. He's on the bloody bench. Just get the ball in the box.
Still got it.
Get in the mixer. He's beat him. Shoot. Oh, I suppose a point away at Brighton's not that bad.
A minute ago. It's all over.
It's a disgrace.
That's lunch.
We scored two goals there. Next.
Is that the end? I think that's the end, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.